Hello and welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back to discuss another episode of The Boondocks, Season 1, Episode 5, A Date with the Health Inspector. Story by Aaron Magruder. Screenplay, once again, by Rodney Barnes. Directed by Joe Horn. This was a pretty funny episode. Charlie Murphy guest starred as Ed Wunsler III, Terry Crews as the health inspector, and Samuel L. Jackson as Gin Rummy. We even get a music shout out, Die Without Vengeance by the McReel Brothers. We focus this episode on Tom, who we've met a couple of times in the past episodes, but we get a far more instructive background on where he's coming from. Straight-laced Mr. DuBois, resident lawyer and all-around chicken shit, is afraid of one thing and one thing only more than anything else.
Get your ass on that bed and prepare for the night of your life.
It has shaped his entire existence. Despite sending many black men to jail to face such a possible fate, he's always managed to do everything within his power to avoid being considered a criminal, not so much as going over the speed limit, no matter how many old ladies tell him he drives like a bitch. It may also be the reason why he married a white woman instead of being intimidated by the idea of dating a black woman. So it was more of a strategic move.
I'm a thought. I'll own it. I'm not ashamed.
Of course, I'm joking, but it made me laugh when I thought about the way in which I would be clowning him as my friend. Like, is this how you got your credit score up? By combining the two. Then one day his nightmares become a step closer in reality when he is mistaken for another black man for a murder of all charges. And for some reason, he calls a 10-year-old little boy from prison and begs him to find the real culprit, like he's Inspector Negro or something. Side note, I didn't know Huey was voiced by Alicia Keys in the pilot episode. Things that you read when you're scanning for bits and pieces for the episode. Tom's dream had me dying. I've been watching you. You have? Yeah, you ain't clean behind your ears. You need to be glistening like me. They call me the health inspector. The way they look down his glistening body, the way he instructed him to look down his glistening body, and the introduction of his dick down to his knees.
My anaconda don't, my anaconda don't, my anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Kind of felt like the beginnings of an early 90s gay porno, if you ask me. Loosen up, bitch. On the news, Level Orange is declared. Some bad shit may happen today, and we have no specifics we can or are willing to share with you, the public. And that's that on that. This causes Jasmine to run over to Huey, hysterical because her dad didn't come home after work, leading her to think terrorists have him. But the truth is much worse and common. He's been racially profiled. And that's when he calls, and Riley, upon hearing that he's in jail, says, "Don't drop the soap." It's like, I thought you got one phone call. But he's in holding, not in jail yet. And after tasking him with this impossible task, he ends the phone call with, "Whatever you do, don't tell my baby Jasmine. I don't want her to know her daddy was somebody's bitch." Having 5 hours to find the murderer, he and Riley recruit Ed Wunsler, drunken psychopath with firepower, and at least, I thought, a military background to solve the case. I was giving the children a reason to justify their actions. First, they need to get back up in the form of Jen Remy, a man who just didn't give a fuck and makes quite the elegant breakfast. Both these fools stepping outside, padded and strutting like they're on their way to a shootout.
You know you really need to come clean. Let me do my thing. Don't you even try to intervene. I will endanger your species like an ostrich. Hold you hostage and crazy feed you swine sausage.
Poor Tom, after being slapped several times by the white officer, the black officer plays good cop and friend by coaxing the innocent black man that he won't go to jail if he just signs this confession, preying on his fears, which for Tom doesn't take too long, about 20 minutes. But in reality, yeah, many white officers, while it's portrayed in a comical sense here, do beat the shit out of black men in interrogation rooms and boys. At least that has been very prevalent, particularly in the 80s and 90s, to which many of those black men are still serving sentences for confessions. And black officers do utilize culture appropriation in order to manipulate the person. And even someone smart can find themselves exploited when isolated, vulnerable, and will try to cop to something in exchange for a lighter sentence, even if they're innocent, because they feel like they don't have any other option, which is a lack of knowledge of their rights. So innocent or guilty, I don't give a fuck. The first words out of your mouth should be lawyer, 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 lawyer. Oh, you're not getting me a lawyer? Then I don't think we have anything to talk about. Lawyer, 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 lawyer. Always get a lawyer. Don't speak to them. There's no reason to have a conversation with them unless they're casually asking you questions. And even then, get a fucking lawyer. Meanwhile, anytime Iraq is brought up, Ed once again brings up his issues with carpeted women, whereas Remy is feeling some kind of way about Riley, questioning not only the fact that he knows they didn't find any weapons of mass destruction because there was none to be found, and his nonsensical sentences such as the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence.
Say what?
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Once again, he tries to explain that there are known unknowns and known knowns, and there are unknowns that are unknown, to which Riley replies,
Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
Frankly, I would not at all question anyone with a gun. Huey would like to enact tactfulness when they get to the apartment building where the murder took place, but Remy doesn't do diplomacy, so he and Ed start terrorizing the spot, while Huey within 4 minutes finds out who the real murderer is, highlighting the low effort many law officials take when it comes to solving crimes that don't matter to them, and a black teen dying over a video game in the hood ain't a priority. When they get back in the car, having accomplished very little with robbing people and beating the shit out of them, the children explain by, I don't know, talking to people, and because most dumbass killers have a tendency to brag about their dumbass crimes, they find out that Terrell Jackson was the one that did it. He got MapQuest directions right here to his house. Riley drew the picture and had almost had enough time to color it. Before they can go get the killer, Dumb and Dumber decide to stop at the mini mart to get some drink and some snacks. And since it's orange alert, a police officer is, of course, friendly profiling the very same spot. Both Ed and Remy have a relationship with the owner, who doesn't allow them to take shit for free. So they pull out their weapons on him and convince the police officer it's the owner that is the armed terrorist, because that's the narrative that jives better than the reality of who keeps shooting up malls, casinos, airports, schools, and other places of great assembly.
Bad power!
Despite that they went in there to rob the man, nonsense prevails, or their narrative prevails, and a shootout ensues as the owner and his cousins come out shooting back, labeling the ones who are getting shot at as terrorists. The Xbox killer killed again while this was happening. And if they had gone to his home instead of this bullshit, the crime that they actually committed, another crime would not have been committed. They could have saved another life. But also, if the 10-year-old would have taken all of the evidence to the police, I think that also may have helped them out, or even told the black man in jail, get him an attorney with evidence to get him out, but he is 10 years old. Instead, Dumb and Dumber, Ed and Remy are heralded as heroes for taking down a terrorist cell. They may and may not have been, I don't know. And if they were a terrorist cell, we're certainly working with Ed Wensler's father, since he pointed out he helped them build the place. So how much of this was intentional? Did these motherfuckers call in the threat themselves? Who the hell knows? But Tom does end up being released, not because of them finding out about the killers, because he killed someone else. And he didn't look anything like the killer that was arrested, and thus he sues the city for that mistake.
Give me your fucking money!
A really fun episode overall. I gave it a 9.6 out of 10. It was great hearing Samuel Jackson do some of his famous quotable lines utilized here. And I hope we see more of Remy, because that's his boy. And I'm glad we do get to see more of Ed. And I think we do, but I honestly don't have any recall. So we do have feedback from Mimi, finally. It's been 85 years, but she said she was going to make it work this week, and I'm proud of her. So let's hear what she has to say about this episode. What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is feedback for Boondocks, episode 5. I watched this pretty quickly, and I didn't watch, I think, episode 4. I had watched several of them, like, back to back, and then I realized that I needed to take a nap because I woke up so early, so I wanted to get this to you. So I was like, I feel like skipping an episode in this kind of show isn't the worst thing. But I definitely want to go back and watch. This episode was hilarious and ridiculous all at the same time. I will say, I know my sister, my oldest sister, the one that passed in September, she freaking loved Boondocks. Like, I remember her, like, drawing pictures. Like, she even was like this was back in the day, was like a fan in the fan club of the author. Like, I feel like, I can't remember exactly when, but I know she wrote a letter and he wrote her back, like fan, like she was a super fan. I even have, she left me some of her, like, Boondocks, like, comic books, I guess is what they're called. I don't know, graphic novels, I don't know, but she was a fan of Boondocks. Like,
if I'm remembering correctly, Boondocks was like a I don't know what you call it, cartoon strip or something. I don't know what you call it, but before it was a cartoon. I feel like graphic novel, comic isn't the right word, but I don't freaking remember. Because they're almost like the way they draw them almost reminds me of like anime. Almost. The actual like characters and the way their heads shaped and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's kind of what it was. I'm not sure, but I know she used to love the Boondocks. And I had seen, you know, episode every now and then here and there, but I never watched all the episodes. So I'm just starting to watch it now, and it's so funny. I know the first and the second episode had me like cracking up, and I was like, this show is really funny. This episode was funny too. I think one of the things that sticks out to me the most, and I can't say, like, I know I've heard, I got the two white guys, the actual like cartoon characters being voiced by black men is hilarious because it's usually the other way around. I thought that was funny as hell, but I definitely 100%, I didn't even have to look it up because I know, recognize Samuel L. Jackson's voice, and I definitely have recognized Eddie Murphy's brother. I forget what his name is, but I know those two played those characters because their voices are so distinct, and I don't know why it cracked me up that two black guys are voicing the voice of two white characters that are basically putting on a caricature of a gangster, because they're clearly not, especially our old boy we met in episode two. They came back from Iraq or Iran, whatever. I think it had to be Iraq. And he's rich, like stupid rich. Ain't no excuse. But I mean, I know people seen it in the suburbs, and this is neither here nor there, but it's reminding me of the time that we're in right now. I saw you had retweeted some of the like Kendrick and Drake rap beef stuff, but it's so funny that like the stuff that they're saying, like I'm on TikTok, and I know you're not, but I fell into the rabbit hole because that new Metro song, the Metro beat that came out, the BBL Drizzy, hilarious. That song's a bop for the record. And if I could sing or play an instrument, I would have joined the trend, but that's neither here nor there. I see a lot of white people like saying that Kendrick, like this last diss or didn't work, or you know, why you calling him, saying he can't use the N-word, and you know, why is it he, you know, why are y'all calling him a white mama biracial, and why is that, like, and they, like, they don't get it. And it's so funny. It's because it's like, it's one of those things that I realize, like, no matter how deep in, you know, social media that you get, no matter how much you immerse yourself in black culture, which is what people do, especially now because it's so readily available, and that's people all over the world, and you use the vernacular, and so like there's things about us that you'll never understand because it is our culture, and it's something that is ingrained in us, and we've been like doing this our whole lives. Like, this is trendy right now, you know, in the last like 6-7 years. Box braids, baby hairs, wigs, sew-ins, all that stuff has become pretty like Americanized socially by other races because they see it on social media, even the way we talk. And then so much so that like even though it's African American vernacular, you know, is what it's called, people start saying it's like social media language or things like that. Like they're so immersed in it that they don't even realize where it come from, that they don't understand what Kendrick is saying. And I didn't even realize this, but apparently a lot of black people do not like Drake. I had no idea. I'm not like a person that's gonna go see him and
that was Queen Mimi with her thoughts on the episode. Unfortunately, she did get cut off, I had to ask if she had any backups, and she didn't. So I would love to, we can definitely talk about that more on our Jones Chronicles and really get into the ins and outs of that, because I do think that that's a good conversation that we had, period, within the Black culture. Like I said, we don't always put our business out there. I was very indifferent on Drake, I can say this much. Like, I saw him only as an artist. I never knew half the shit that came out about him, or that it surprised me that he had a huge Black population. But I also didn't know he made an album with A$AP, and for a lot of Black women, they felt like it was very derogatory towards them, and Black women, they never came at him like that. So there definitely seems to be a racial, it is definitely a Black thing. It's a Black thing. So a lot of white people do need to kind of stay out of it, because this is primarily a Black thing within Black culture. And while, sure, understanding what's going on, I think, is important, if you really are coming at it from a place of understanding, and I like that you talked about the appropriation of a lot of Black culture without fully understanding what those things mean, and really having it, and it's funny because you did send me that Instagram reel of different white people breaking it down to like their parents and stuff like that. It was pretty funny. But yeah, truly figuring out the crux of what is going on there, and why Drake got basically emaciated. because sometimes you don't fight battles that you don't fight outside of your weight class. And I think there is a difference in the culture, just because you're Black, how you were raised and where you were raised, those things are important, and how you try not to appropriate an identity that doesn't match who you are, despite the fact that you are making songs even within that particular genre. Right? You did some good vocals on like Wayne shit, on another, I think you were on Nicki Minaj's, from what I remember. But I never saw him as a quote unquote gangster. This is all new to me. And then, unfortunately, you can't stand in a glass house. Like, people don't, especially if they hate you, like, they ain't gonna. I think he expected friendly fire, and he did not see the many, like, it was almost like it was a intervention of Black artists stopping him where he was starting. Like, okay, look, it's enough. But Kendrick wasn't that one. He wasn't that one. And you tried to play that one, and you tried to do some shit that you thought, and like, so like how you fuck with someone who ain't never messed with you. Like, you know what? I don't fuck with you. I don't like what you, I don't like you, but I ain't got nothing against you to be mad at you. But then all of a sudden you just come over here in my lane. Like, oh, okay. Well, if you really want me to speak on how I really feel, then you about to honestly gonna be crying home to Toronto. And that's exactly what happened. But I think even his stands, because stands are that's what they're meant to. There's fans and there's stands. Stands are not rational people, so we don't count them. But I think even his fans are coming around to a lot of what has actually been happening, and are fully kind of walking away from that support. BBL Jersey is a banger. That's the one thing I kept saying. I was like, it didn't even matter to me at first. They said no meat in the game. But I was like, I know, all I know is Kendrick keep coming out with bangers. And I keep, like, that's just hilarious. Go play your drums. So that's exactly what you do when you make a banger. Make in front of your ass. BBL Jersey. I mean, and everything about what came out on Kendrick's side was just so quotable and memeable, and he allowed other Black creators to profit off of what he did. Then he dropped the album. It was like he just decided, like he maximized everything about what he did. It was like, oh, okay, you want to pull me into the limelight of where you standing at? That's fine. I'm not only going to drag the shit out of you, but I'm going to make a profit on your humiliation. And I'm going to get every hood person that's trying to come up on YouTube making some money, making little skits and things. So there is this one channel I never heard of, but now I look at all the time because they skits are funny as hell. And it's not just about rap beefs. It's about basketball. The one with LeBron is so funny. It's not us. It's not us. It's them. You imagine how they'd say if we made 10 points a game? Dude, if you're not listening to, what is it, RDC Live? That whole entire channel be having me dead. Dead. I just been going through the skits. I'm like, I haven't never heard of this before. But so that's a lot came out of it. Not positive for Dre. I'm not sure where you were going with that, but I would love to have a longer conversation about it and get Shy's opinion, who really doesn't have any, like, she just don't care. Doesn't, and I'm the same way. Like, this is more of like a major scandal. And then on top of a scandal, a conversation. And a very important conversation. And I think Kendrick came out there like a man. And he came out like a little bitch. It's awesome that your sister was a huge fan of the Boondocks. And even the creator wrote her back. That's pretty damn awesome. So I can't wait to hear your thoughts on the next episode that are more complete. But if you want to send feedback, blackercouch@gmail.com. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, wherever good podcasts can be found, go down to the radio section, drop some stars, leave a review. I don't want to hear you say nigga no more. We don't want to hear you say. That's what I was saying earlier. I got distracted about the quotable shit. And it's probably A minor. Yeah, wasn't even a close race. But once again, blackercouch@gmail.com. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.